Welcome to another issue of Launch, where we talk about how things that inventors and entrepreneurs need to know as they launch their business and as it progresses. This is Ron Reardon with our producer, Lee Cantor.
Good morning, Ron. Back from the West Coast.
Yeah, I was over there in San Diego for quite some time with the National Association of Patent Practitioners, and we had a really great meeting.
Are they a wild bunch?
No, they're pretty sedate. The famous statement when you're studying to take the patent bar is that they ask the question, who becomes a patent attorney or patent agent?
And the answer?
Those people that don't have the personality to do tax work.
Why? What brings a person to be a patent attorney? What's their passion?
Well, you know, I know in my particular case, you know, I enjoy creating and I enjoy working with creative people. But generally, in order to become a patent agent or attorney, you have to have a science undergrad. And as you probably know, people that go into electrical engineering, civil, physics, stuff like that, they're not the most outgoing, extroverted kind of people.
Right. So that must be pretty interesting when you gather. What? How many were there? Were there hundreds of them?
No, there was, I think we had 40 at the one session and 60 at the other.
Wow. And so they came from all over the country? Or?
All over the country, yeah. We had, you know, quite a contingent from California, but there were people from everywhere.
And did you learn anything?
Yeah, quite a bit. You know, whenever I go to a meeting like that, I'm always looking for just one piece of information that's useful, and I got a lot more than one, so it was very,
good.
Very successful.
Did you meet any good people we'll be seeing on the show?
There was quite possibly. There were people that are tangential, you know, to the invention business.
Right.
That would be really good. And unfortunately, none of them are right here in Atlanta. We'd have to have them either
call in
or fly in, drive in, something
right.
like that.
But so you go there for the education, or you do it for networking, or both?
Yeah, it's primarily for the education because it's called the patent practice update.
Mm-hmm.
And so patent law is always changing.
Right.
And so we had speakers coming in talking about recent court cases that have kind of changed what is considered to be patentable material, you know, what's considered to be obvious.
Right.
Items like that, and then how to write the patent application in order to get around the recent rulings.
So now, is it the government that drives that, or is it the judges that kind of interpret the law maybe differently, or both?
Yeah, it's the judges interpreting the law, because generally these court cases is one company suing another company for infringement.
Mm-hmm.
And so the company that's being sued for infringement always tries to attack the patent.
Right.
And to get it invalidated or whatever. And that's when the judges will actually take a look at the law and perhaps, you know,
Interpret it,
you know, based on a little nuance or something like that.
Right. And then once they do that, then that becomes the precedent?
Yeah. That's it. And once it's the precedent, then you know either that certain inventions can't be patented anymore, or that when you write the claims, you have to, it's like note to self, be sure and put a computer in here in the claim so that this software claim will now be allowed. Because
right.
if you try to get the claim without the computer being in there, then it's not going to make it.
More stuff for you to know.
That's right.
Your brain is so big, Ron.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of that cartoon from The Far Side where the student raises his hand in the middle of the teacher talking and says, you know, Miss Jones, can I go home now? My brain is full.
It never ends, right? They're just always tweaking. I guess the judges are always kind of modifying.
Yeah, patent law changes every year. Sometimes it seems like it changes every week.
Mm-hmm. And is there any high-profile case that you guys were discussing? It was the cause celeb?
Yeah, two of them. One was called Bilski, and the other one's called KSR. Bilski has to do with what actually is patentable,
mm-hmm.
okay, especially in the area of business methods. And the other one is KSR, is when there's an item in patent law that says if the invention is obvious, okay, then it can't be patented. But it leaves it very subjective as what, you know,
obvious means.
What obvious means. There's no real, there's no 1, 2, 3 rules
right.
on that. And KSR seemed to, it appeared to make it that everything's obvious.
and
that's what's got everybody
right.
Kind of concerned, because they basically were saying that if it's, you know, known components that when combined produces a known result, then the invention's obvious.
Right.
Okay.
That's it kind of reminds me of like when someone is being charged with murder and then they're trying to get them off because they're temporarily insane. It's like, what sane person would murder someone?
Right.
You know, it's like, can every murderer then take that defense?
Yeah, I'm not going to go there. But, yeah, I understand. But, you know, my co-host normally is Jim DeBetta. He's not here today. We forgot to announce that at the beginning. But his wife is expecting, and they're at the doctor because, you know, the delivery is, I think, only about a week away.
Oh, how exciting for him.
Oh, yeah, you bet.
He already has a bunch of kids, right?
That's my understanding, yeah. He's got maybe three, I don't know.
He's very virile, that Jim.
They haven't figured out yet what causes it, I don't think.
Yeah, we're working on that. Maybe a different doctor would help.
I don't know. A different water supply. They always say it's in the water.
Yeah. You know? So you brought in something interesting today.
Yeah, whenever I get a call and somebody says, hey, I've got this great idea, you know, let's get together for that, you know, complimentary session where we can discuss the invention, I'll say,
so you offer a complimentary initial?
Oh yeah. So it's 1 hour complimentary. We'll look at the invention, and it doesn't cost them a nickel. But when they call me, I say, well, you know, give me your email address, and let me send you 41 questions where you can kind of self-assess your invention. And about half the people that I send this to never call me back.
And so that they don't even get to do the free conversation with you.
They realize that it would be a waste of their time and mine also.
Because so that's good for you.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Because I tell them that they need to add up the scores on this because it goes from 1 to 10, 41 questions, and then they divide by 41. And if the answer is less than 60, they need to walk away from that invention because it doesn't have a chance. Okay. Either that or they need to look at the weak areas and strengthen them and then call me.
Now, has anybody ever got a perfect score?
No. No, that doesn't happen.
What was the highest score you ever got?
It seems like something like a 90 is about the highest score that I've seen.
And did that turn out to be a good invention?
Time will tell.
Oh, it's still in progress?
Yeah, remember, it takes years to be an overnight success.
Right, so they're still battling that.
Yeah, so even with products that you launch, it takes a while to get traction.
Right. And so what was the highest score of something that was a home run or a big winner?
That I don't remember. You know, I've had so many that became a blur now.
Right. But most people score in what range?
Most people score about 65 to 75.
Uh-huh.
That's usually the scores that I hear.
So what are some of the questions?
Okay, the first question is the invention significantly better? Okay. Products that have a wow factor would be a winner. And if your product causes the buyer to say incredible, then you'll score it high. But if they just say
it's okay,
right. Then it's going to score low. And the example I give is the DVD player versus the VCR.
Right.
Because the VCR took it something like 28 years before almost everybody had one.
Right.
There were still some holdouts that never bought a VCR.
Right. They're waiting for that comeback of the tape.
I guess. But then when the DVD player showed up, it took about 3 years before it had something like 90% penetration and everybody had one.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because the DVD player was so much better than a VCR.
You couldn't record. That was I think, held them back a little.
A little bit, yeah. But as far as just pure entertainment.
Right, it was a way better experience.
You could skip back and forth, you could go to the director's cut.
Right, fast forward in seconds instead of 10 minutes.
Right, you go behind the scenes, it was just so much better. And so they would score that, between 1 and 10. And because the reality is if your invention is only 10% better than what's out there, it's probably not going to sell. It's really got to have some real punch to it. It's either got to be better, easier to use, or cost a whole lot less, or it's got to have some features that people are like, whoa, got to have this,
Right. And it's hard to be that compelling, because there's so much competition out there in the marketplace for everything.
Right. Yeah, and, when you look at things like TiVo, okay?
Right.
I'm a late adopter. I don't have TiVo, but both my sons do.
Yeah. I have TiVo. I was an early adopter.
You were an early adopter. Right. Okay. When you look at time shifting, which is what TiVo allows you to do, okay, or just the fact that you can, pause a program and go to the bathroom, which is kind of nice.
Right, answer the phone, get the door.
Right. Whatever. That was something that we never had before, but, people's schedules are so busy that the ability to shift time, to be able to watch your favorite program when you want to, that's a feature that people were willing to pay for.
Right. Well, and something that was kind of an unintended consequence from that is once you realize you can do that, you can go, you know what, the show starts at 8, but I'll start watching at 8:10, and then I'll fast forward, and then it'll finish at 8:30 at the same time, but I won't have to watch any of the commercials.
Right, yes. Going past the commercials, that's a really good feature that they probably didn't think of at the beginning.
Well, it's interesting. There were two types of DVRs initially. One was TiVo, and then there was a competitive brand.
Yeah.
And the competitive brand allowed you to jump past the whole commercial and not even see it. TiVo chose to be able to fast forward it where you could still see it on the screen, except like really fast, in fast motion. And that was so they wouldn't upset the advertisers.
Oh, I think that was a smart move on their part.
Right. Yeah. So they're saying, look, it's still there. You know, if somebody wants to stop and watch it, they can.
Right.
But the other brand, which no longer exists, jumped like you would leap a minute or two into the past it, so you wouldn't see it at all.
Isn't that something? Because I think the, you know, the commercials people really want to see is at the Super Bowl.
Right.
Those commercials are supposedly so good, people actually watch those commercials.
And in response to TiVo, some companies actually created TiVo-friendly commercials where, like, one second of time on the air is 28 frames. I think it's 28 frames per second when you video something.
Right.
So because TiVo can pause and then go in slow motion frame by frame, they created like mini messages within, and they would tell you, oh, this was just for TiVo people, so watch this commercial, and you pause it, and then you can just start watching it frame by frame, and they would have a little show in one split second of 28 little frames of different messages for just TiVo people.
Isn't that incredible? That's something that always amazes me, is how one innovation creates other innovations.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, when you look at the iPod, how many accessories are there to the iPod?
Right. I mean, tons. You can get everything. And they're not made by Apple.
No. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why the patent office, you know, lets somebody have a patent, you know, where you've got kind of a limited monopoly for 20 years, as they know that both short-term and long-term, it's good for the economy.
Right. And as long as, so Apple is okay with other people kind of using their device as a way to make money because it just makes them more popular, because now you bought this device, it only works with your Apple product. Right. So
Everybody wins.
Right.
Yeah. It's to me, you know, it's the constantly growing pie, you know, concept is that there's plenty of money for everybody.
Right. It's not a zero sum game where Apple's win is their loss.
No, it's a win-win. So the second question on the invention assessment is, you know, what's the stage of development? So a winner would be a product that's packaged, ready to put on the shelf. You know, so the question is your product ready to go? Score 10. If it needs a little bit more work, score mid range. If it needs a lot more work, score low.
Yeah, no one gets a 10 here, right?
Well, I mean, if it's ready to go to the to the store by the time they call me and they get this assessment, then it would get a 10.
Yeah, but does that ever happen?
No. No. But normally, it's an ID on a napkin when it comes to me.
You're getting a lot of zeros and ones.
It doesn't go to zero. It goes 1 to 10, so they'd get a 1.
Right.
Okay, if it's just an ID on a napkin. But there's some people that come to me that they've got a working prototype, but it's still, you know, the packaging and the barcode and all
so
like that.
So a working prototype is a 5?
No, a working prototype would probably be up there at the 7 or 8, because all that's left, is just the store ready part of it.
Right.
Yeah. It all depends on, when I say working prototype, you know, is it made out of cardboard and chewing gum, or is this something that, you know, you've actually had it machined, or you had the mold made and all of that, but you still haven't got it, you know, packaged up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it could, you know, range anywhere from, you know, a 5 to maybe an 8, you know, or something like that. But, you know, if it's actually in the package with the barcode, you know, with a little hanger to go on the shelf, that'd be a 10.
Right.
Okay. And sometimes, you know, people will go to that level before they say it's, you know, it's time
before
for the patent.
Before the patent? Yeah. Wow. That would seem pretty risky.
Well, I mean, they've you know, had everybody sign NDAs and all like that. And, you know, and it could be that maybe their business strategy is to go without a patent. You know, maybe they thought, you know, this will sell for a year or two, and who needs a patent?
Right.
But then, you know, they start getting some feedback from folks, and it looks like, well, maybe this thing maybe could be enduring, and maybe there could be version 2 and version 3.
Right. So,
and, okay, maybe now we need to have a patent because this thing's going to last longer.
Right. So they'll invest then after they realize that.
Yeah. Yeah, it all depends on their business strategy. Mm-hmm. You know, your patent strategy has to support your business strategy.
Right.
That's the way it goes. The next question is, you know, trend of demand. You know, a winner there is products that have an upward trend of demand.
Yes.
So, because, you know, if you're inventing for something that there's a declining trend of demand,
right.
That could be bad.
Yes, that could be bad.
You do want things to be growing. And so the question
like
is...
Like your typewriter. Like if you invented a new typewriter, that's probably a lessening of demand.
Yeah, I think it's pretty darn low. You know, when you say typewriter, I was actually telling somebody over the weekend, I still have the typewriter I used in high school and college.
Really?
It's an Underwood manual with the little ribbon with black on top and red on the bottom.
You can get more ribbons?
Yeah, believe it or not, they still have the ribbons for sale.
Really?
I don't know if it's because there's these, you know.
Because of you, just for you.
I haven't used that typewriter in a long time. I'm, you know, eventually I'll probably sell it on eBay.
Right, or to a museum.
Or to a museum or something like that. But it still works. I mean, there are some keys that stick, which kind of slow you down.
So just go to the typewriter repair store.
yeah, I don't know where that would be. And would you believe that vinyl records, that there's about 2 million of those sold a year?
Sold? Really?
Sold.
Wow, because I have them in a box, my old vinyl records.
Yeah, I thought you know, the industry was dead, but I remember reading an article not too long ago that there are still people buying it to the tune of 2 million a year.
That's quite a few. Are they just buying, like, oldies?
No.
Or, like, new music is coming out?
New music. Believe it or not, a lot of new music, they actually have a limited run of the vinyls for this very slender niche market.
Wow. Because I showed my kids 11, I showed him a record, and he's like, couldn't fathom how the device you would need to make music come from that.
That's right. Now, as far as I know, there's no more 8-track tapes being made.
Yeah, that they've stopped.
That they've stopped.
That's a good idea. But that wasn't the best invention.
That's true. But I was blown away when I found out that they're still making the vinyl records.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's still those that hold
that's
out.
That's funny.
And, you know, back on the typewriter, there's probably some reporters.
No,
that with two fingers.
Right. Andy Rooney probably still
are still typing on a manual typewriter. Okay, so yeah, the trend of demand needs to be going upward. And the next question is stability of demand. And a winner there would be products that will be in demand day in, day out, year in, year out. You know, if the product's going to be used every day, yahoo, you know, score higher. If it's going to be rarely used, then you'd score low.
How is that? Does that work like in the, take batteries or light bulbs, where you can come up with like a great battery that lasts like 50 years? I'm sure they could technologically do that, but it's not a good business move, you know, where it's like, isn't it a better business move for some products to be kind of have a lifespan that's short?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that I discuss with inventors when they'll come up with their invention. I'm like, well, that's great. And when somebody buys one of these, then what?
Right.
When do they buy another one?
Right.
Or do you have any accessories that goes with this invention that they need to buy the accessories that are disposable?
Right. Can you make it a little less sturdy?
Yeah.
They'll replace it.
Well, it's kind of like the razor handle and the razor blade.
Right.
You buy that. Well, you usually get the handle free.
Right.
Okay. But if you were to buy the handle, you'd buy it one time.
Right.
That's it. But then you're going to need those blades on a continuing basis.
Because I just saw there was an article recently about that company Crocs that made those shoes, the rubbery shoes.
Yeah.
And that they're about to go out of business because the shoes are so durable that you just have one pair.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like you're replacing them. And then they eventually went out of style and then they're done.
Right. And I think they should have thought about something that you could actually, you know, stick onto the Crocs.
Right. Well, there were companies that had little add-ons to it.
Right.
And then, but I guess when the Crocs are gone, then
that's it.
They'll be gone too.
Yeah. I mean, and that's something that people need to think about is if everybody just buys one, and then that's it.
Now what do you do?
Yeah. I mean, you're going to penetrate that initial market and then, you know, it's over and you're going to move on to your next invention.
And they had a lifespan, I think, of less than 10 years.
Wow. About that. And once again, you know, I never bought a croc, but my sons bought
it.
They all have one.
Right.
So when I was getting my MBA, the marketing professor told us over and over again, remember, you are not the target market.
Yes, that's a good lesson for a lot of people.
That's right. Because a lot of times inventors will ask me, you know, I said, would you buy one of these? And I'd look at it and I'd say, no, I would not buy one.
Right.
I said, but I'm not your target market. You know, either my wife would be your target market
right.
or maybe my sons would be your target
sure.
market, but I'm not it.
Right. So don't take it personally.
That's right. Yeah, just because I wouldn't buy it, you know, doesn't
right.
mean it's not going to sell. Because, you know, really it is a mystery as to what sells and what doesn't.
Right. It almost seems arbitrary. I mean, you have to do a lot of things right to be in the game to have a chance, but, you know, the reason some things catch on and other things don't, I mean.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I think we've mentioned before the device that I ran across that it's a plastic handle with a blade inside, and it's designed for shaving bald heads.
Right.
And they've sold lots of those. Obviously, you and I are not going to buy
right.
one. We got lots of
hair.
Red hair,
exactly.
Because we're not the target market. But that doesn't mean, I mean, you know, bald seems to be in if you look
right.
at TV shows and, you know,
if I was
like
losing
it.
My hair, I'd shave it all off. I wouldn't go, like, partway.
Right. Yeah. And I'm hoping that maybe there's a replaceable blade that goes in that device so that the
right.
guy just doesn't sell with one plastic device.
Right.
You know, we had also talked earlier about the device that was called a clever cutter. It's actually a box cutter that's allowed on airlines
right,
through TSA
yeah.
Because the blade is kind of hidden in there
right.
where it can't be used as a weapon. And the only complaint this inventor got was that once the blade got dull, they had to throw the entire
device
away.
Right.
And so he's now on his third generation where he's now going to have a replaceable blade that
right.
pops into that. And, you know, he sold 2 million of the old ones. But now he's going to be selling those handles with these replaceable blades. And
right. Now you have a customer for life.
That's right.
Because it's not like they can go somewhere else to get it.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's for certain. And, you know, the next item here, it has to do with liability. It says, you know, a winner would be product that has absolutely no chance of hurting anyone regardless of how they were used. You know, can your product hurt the end user? Can it hurt the seller? The more likely it is to hurt anyone, the lower your score should be. If your product cannot hurt anyone anytime, score 10. If it can hurt anyone under any circumstances, you know, mm-hmm. lower the score. And, you know, especially if you're thinking about baby products, if this is something small
right.
that can be swallowed,
yeah,
this is bad.
Right. Bad.
Or if it has a part on it.
That's small and can be
that,
swallowed.
That can be pulled off and all like that. That,
right.
that could be bad.
Right.
And so, you know, they need to think through stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, these are the type of questions, you know, that are on there.
And they're all available at your website, right? Can they ask for that? Or they?
No. These are not available on my website because I consider this to be proprietary.
So then how
so
do they get it?
People call me.
Or they have to actually have a conversation with you
again? They call me, you know, and just say, you know, send me the 41 questions, and
mm-hmm.
I get their email address, and I send them the 41 questions,
right.
and I don't bug them. They either call me back or they don't.
Right.
And I just got an email back here recently where they said, you know, I scored an 85, you
wow.
know, I'm excited, you know. And so we go to the next step of actually, you know, I'll send them what's called an invention disclosure where they'll describe the invention to
right.
me, and then we'll get together and discuss it and go to the next step, which is, you know, is it really protectable?
Does sometimes they score themselves, and then when you actually get the score, you realize, maybe it was not.
Yeah, that does.
They might have kind of.
Yeah, that does happen. You know, the one flaw with this is that it is a subjective test.
Right.
And it is their baby, and they're going to have a tendency to score high. So, when we get together, I've had times when I've told them.
You had to flunk them?
This doesn't have a chance, you know.
Right.
I had one mother come to me where her son had invented a particular device, and I took just a very quick look at it, and I was like, well, I don't know if this is patentable or not, but this is not going to sell because it really violates, you know, the basic principles of marketing.
Right.
Because the person that wants it is not the person that's going to buy it.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And it had to do with the dimming of automobile lights.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, if you're driving along and somebody's got their lights on bright, that the person with the lights on bright, that their car would sense that your car is coming and it would automatically dim the lights so that you're not blinded.
Right.
So think about that. The person that wants it, okay,
right.
is not the person that's going to buy it.
Right.
Okay. Plus, you know, the chance of the automobile industry putting those on as standard equipment is zero.
Right.
So people would have to buy it as an aftermarket and install it. I'm just like, I told her, I said, don't put a nickel into this. It doesn't have a chance. And she thanked me, and, you know, she left. And the only benefit I got out of that is I get to talk about it on the radio.
Exactly. Well, it's one of those things where, yeah, that's an interesting idea.
Right.
I mean, it would be nice, but it's just not going to, like, market. It won't sell or won't be. And no one, there's no incentive for anybody to do it.
Right. I mean, it's a problem because if you've been driving and somebody has their lights on bright and they forget that it's on bright, I mean, you're blinded. I mean, I was taught when I was learning how to drive that when that happens, you look, you know, to the right. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, your peripheral vision, you know, kind of keeps you on the road and everything, but you sit there and look at the curb on the right so that you're not just totally blinded until you get past them.
And you flash them, your brights at them and curse at them.
That's correct.
It's universal.
It's very universal. So, I mean, it's a problem that's hungry for a solution.
But that's not it.
That wasn't it.
Right.
Yeah. It almost reminds me of the joke I heard a comedian do once that if you encounter a driver, you know, on the road, it's just being an idiot.
Okay? Right.
That everybody should be equipped with a little dart gun, you know, with a little rubber sucker kind of things on it, that you drive up behind them and you would aim it at their back windshield and you'd push the thing and it would, you know, the dart would hit there and a little flag would come out that says, I'm an idiot. Okay? And that when the police saw a car drive by with about 10 I'm an idiot on it, they pull them over and give them a ticket.
Right. That's a good invention.
That's a good invention, yeah. But you'd probably get in trouble for shooting darts at somebody's windshield.
It wouldn't pass the liability test, I guess.
No. I think you'd probably get into road rage where they pull you over and beat you up.
Right, yeah. That's good.
Yeah. So the other thing is inventory. Okay, I think we'll probably kind of wrap up with this one, is that inventory requirements. A winner would be a product that has low or no inventory requirement. You know, if the product is small, lightweight, score high.
What's an inventory? Like, that means you have to produce lots of them initially? Or?
Well, part of it is just storage.
Mm-hmm.
That if you have a warehouse, you know, if your product is big as a bus, okay, then, you know, storage is going to be a real problem.
Yes.
But if it's something that's the size, you know, of a postage stamp, you know, to go to the other extreme, then that's good.
Right. Okay? You can put that in your basement.
That's right. You know, I always tell people that if they can invent something small that's made of an inexpensive material that everybody wants, then you've really...
That's good.
The probability of success starts going way up. But I've talked to people that their device was as big as this desk, was made out of cast iron. Okay.
Yeah. I can see there's going to be some shipping problems with this, too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, think about the forklift to get it up.
Up
on,
and down.
To go
and move it. Just move it in the store.
Yeah. I mean, this was for the golf industry, and it was to really facilitate, you know, the cleaning of the mowers that go out there and keep the greens done and everything.
Right.
Instead of it having to be done on the floor and, you know, people's backs getting hurt. It was the guy invented in his industry, and it was a real good invention. But it was huge, and it was heavy. And it's like, goodness gracious, this thing's...
You can't make that out of plastic.
No, not a chance. So anyway, we don't have time to go through all the 41 questions, but you kind of get a gist of, you know, you really need to think through, does your invention have the characteristics that's needed to succeed in the marketplace?
Right.
And it's just an indicator because, you know, Rubik's Cube violated every rule of the toy industry.
Right.
Because it was complicated and, you know.
And you had to be like a super genius
to use it. But that didn't keep it from selling like gazillions.
Right.
Okay.
That's the marketplace is the ultimate focus group. Yeah.
That is true. So even though you might fail with my 41 questions, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's not going to succeed. I mean, you know, the Cabbage Patch Dolls was another one.
Right.
It was one ugly doll.
Right.
But a lot of them sold.
Yeah.
Okay. But anyway, it's an indicator of a go, no-go for an inventor.
And it just gives you another data point, you know, how willing are you to take the risk if you fail this test, you know? Some people, the Cabbage Patch Doll people said, yeah, I'm going boldly forward.
That's right, yeah, because it turned out that people wanted to adopt a doll. And they wanted to send that doll to camp and all this other kind of, and they wanted to have a birth certificate
exactly,
for the doll.
To have birthday parties.
That's right. So he had some other stuff that overcome the beauty,
looks.
The looks of the doll.
Right. Who would have thought that would catch on?
That's right.
All right. Well, I guess that wraps up another episode. Is there more?
Nope, that's it.
Okay.
It's been great talking with you.
All right. And we will see you next week on launch, and hopefully Jim's better. Our wife has the kid, and it's a celebration for all of us next week.
That's right.